Thank you, first of all, for myself, for the kind introduction. I'd like to express my gratitude to ISN for giving me the opportunity to present this topic, therapeutic apheresis, evidence and guideline, concentrating on the non-renal indication. So I have no conflict of interest to declare. So this is briefly the outline of my talk. So extracorporeal therapy is a procedure that includes diversions of blood through external circuit for the purpose of blood purification, whereby excessive fluids, endogenous or exogenous poisons are removed, therefore supporting the role of a vital organ that is failing. So, as nephrologists, we are exposed to these 8 types of modality for extracorporeal therapy. Okay, hemodialysis, hemofiltration, hemodiafiltration, CKRT, hemoperfusion, apheresis, immunoadsorption, and liver dialysis. And today's context, I'm just going to touch about apheresis. So, a bit of the interesting history about apheresis is derived from the word Greek, which means to separate from the whole. So, the earliest continuous flow centrifugation device was a manually operated hand crank cream separator by a Swedish scientist called Dr. Carl Gustav Patrick de Laval. He's also famous for designing the turbine engine. So, about 60 years later, during the World War II, so as plasma is urgently needed to treat the wounded soldiers, so Dr. Edward Cohn from Harvard University obtained an emergency approval from the United States Department of Research to use the same hand crank device, okay, to separate the plasma from the whole blood donor. In doing so, he managed to manually separate albumin, gamma globulin, fibrinogen, and fibrin to treat many wounded soldiers, and many lives were saved. So, a few years later, Dr. Edward Cohn managed to develop the first closed system whole blood separation device. So, 12 years in 1960, and very interesting things happened where the IBM engineer, Mr. George Judson, unfortunately, his son has been diagnosed with CML, leukemia with excessive white blood cell. So, Mr. George approached a hematologist and oncologist, which is Dr. Emil Friedrich, to ask whether he can use his skill to build a machine to remove the excessive white blood cells. And this became a very successful venture. And the excessive white blood cells were used to treat the neutropenic sepsis patient at that time. Subsequently, IBM was bought over by the COBE, and they have introduced the scope spectra of machine. In 1977, another interesting development would be the publication of membrane separator from Japan. So basically, there are two methods of blood separation when we talk about apheresis. The first is membrane separation, and secondly is centrifugation. In filtration techniques, the blood is pumped through a membrane with the pores, allowing plasma to pass through while retaining the blood cells. Is available as hollow fibers, or the older device will use a parallel plate membrane. Centrifugation will just separate the components based on the specific gravities of the blood components, and sometimes also depends on the cellular size, and all machines need to have a separation factor. So when we talk about extracorporeal therapy, the size does matter. On the extreme right hand side, so that is where therapeutic apheresis is come into the pictures. There are aims to remove large molecule as the size of the albumin, 55 kilodeltas and above. The middle range molecule like B12 and folate are best removed through the convective treatment of CKRT. The smaller molecule, as we all well heard of, so urea nitrogen are small molecule, so their best removal techniques would be through diffusion clearance via hemodialysis. So, there's two types of apheresis. We can use it for the donor, for the purpose of harvesting the plasma. Or, donor apheresis can be employed to use cytopheresis to remove the red cells, platelet, granulocyte, or hematopoietic progenitor cells from the blood donors. And most of the time, as a clinician and nephrologist, when we prescribe apheresis, the purpose is to do either a plasma exchange. So what are we removing? So we are removing the antibodies, the toxic antibodies, the paraproteins, inflammatory mediators, and at the same time when we infuse the FFP, we aim to provide back the deficient or defective factors. So cytopheresis, as a clinician, we can prescribe it to exchange red cells in disease such as sickle cell disease or malaria. In leukemia, cytopheresis is used to deplete the white blood cells. In cases of patients have too much platelet, so platelet apheresis is employed to removal of the platelet purposes. So the key process of apheresis involves four major components: separation of blood component, removal of the selected component, re-infusion of the remaining component to ensure there's no wastage of the plasma, and this allows a large volume of blood to be entered or collect and exchanged with different types of cells and blood components. So when you look at the guidelines, so there is about 8 to 12 different modality definitions of apheresis. I'm just going to concentrate on the three most common types that we will face. Of course, the first one is the therapeutic plasma exchange. It happens where the blood of the patient is passed through a medical device, which is called a plasma separator. So the plasma are removed from the blood with all the different components. And you can see a broad range of plasma-rich substances will be removed: electrolytes, albumin, lipoproteins. So we do lose a lot of substances when we do plasma exchange. And in doing so, we either infuse the patient back with albumin or fresh frozen plasma. So the second therapy that we come across would be called a double filtration plasma pheresis. This happens where this is filter-based procedures that remove pathogenic substances from the plasma based on their size, and then they go through a second filter called a plasma component separator. As shown from the graph here, the range of substance removed from double filter plasma filtration is much less than a therapeutic plasma exchange. The third procedures or definitions would involve immunoabsorption. This is a procedure in which the plasma of the patient after membrane separation or centrifugation method is passed through a medical absorber column which has the capacity to absorb the so-called toxins. So, what are the ideal toxic molecules when we think of plasma pheresis? First of all, it has to be a high molecular weight substances more than 15,000 kilodalton. And secondly, the substance have to have some toxicity profiles to human's body. Third criteria, highly protein bound, okay, so that you remain in the intravascular place. Number fourth criteria is low volume or distribution, less than 0.2 liters per kilogram, a long half-life and a low turnover. When sometimes we face off situation like COVID or other conditions that we have not seen before, and we're going to consider plasma pheresis, so this is the rules of the thumb, McLeod's criteria. We must understand the pathogenesis of the disease and whether we could remove the antibodies or the pathogenic substances. And by removing those substances, the patient should demonstrate a better clinical effect. So these are the three important McLeod's criteria. Luckily, nowadays, most of the time when we look for the evidence at the guidelines to prescribe apheresis, we refer to the Journal of Clinical Apheresis, which have all the updated guidelines of all the indications of doing apheresis, which I'm going to base my evidence on this publication. So a brief history about our Journal of Clinical Apheresis. The first issue published in 1986. Every 7 years, has a new publication, and this happened until 2010 because the overwhelming evidence, the publication shortened to every 3 years. In year 2000, the clinical indications has started to be categorized and followed by the strengthening of evidence with recommendation grade in 2010 issues. So now we have the latest issue will be 2019. We expect a new revision in this year. The latest update would include all the indication as shown here, which I'm not going to talk about in today's. So this only shows that the level of indication and fact sheets will fluctuate over the years. So it's not something that's static. The indication can come up or it also can come down based on the evidence gathered by the committee. So when the disease is categorized as category 1, so it's basically this is disorder which is accepted as first line treatment by using apheresis as a primary standalone treatment. So when it's category 4, so you shouldn't do apheresis because it will bring more harm to the patient. So physician or clinician usually like category 1 because you don't have to think too much. So category 3, we need to discuss, and because there's no evidence and a lot of decision making need to be individualized in category 3 condition. So the JCA also have gradings of recommendation. Of course, grade 1A is randomized controlled trial, and grade 2C is by just case study and observational series. Briefly about how do we prescribe therapeutic apheresis, we need a vascular access, be it catheters or the patient has fistula for existing dialysis patient. Heparin and citrate can be used as the anticoagulation. The plasma volume is usually 1 to 1.5 plasma volume because that would remove about 80% of the plasma in one exchange when you do 1.5 liters to 2 liters plasma volume exchange. Replacement fluid is either albumin or FFP. Then we need to determine the treatment frequency, duration, impacts of the drugs removal, and we need to have certain clinical and laboratory endpoint. Okay. The disease for the renal and non-renal indication, I have summarized into what category and what modality is recommended, clinical features, rationale, the prescription of apheresis, and some technical notes. Let's start with some common neurological condition that we are sometimes being referred to assist with the apheresis. So it's only three conditions that I'm going to describe. The first is Guillain-Barre. Okay, the recommended therapy is a TPE with a grade 1A recommendation. As we know, the disease is characterized by acute progressive paralyzing illness affecting both sensory and motor nerve. And this is due to autoimmune antibodies mediated. Benefit is seen as if we initiate the TPE as soon as possible. The volume is 1 to 1.5 plasma volume using either albumin or plasma. Regime could be daily or EOD. However, relapse may occur up to 5 to 10% of the cases, 2 to 3 weeks after cessation of the TPE. If that happens, additional TPE is typical and would be helpful. What about for CIDP? In CIDP, one can use either TPE or immunoadsorption therapy with a grade 1B recommendation. This is due to the autoimmune inflammation of the peripheral nerve developed over 2 months, sometimes maybe have a chronic progressive or relapsing causes. And both humoral and cell-mediated responses have been documented. Again, you can use albumin or plasma, 1 to 1.5 total plasma volume exchange. Use it 2 to 3 weeks, so until improvement. However, rapid deterioration or relapse is expected if a patient has CIDP, and this may necessitate other maintenance therapy. And lastly, what about myasthenia gravis? Myasthenia gravis have grade 1B recommendation. This is due to the presence of autoantibodies bind to the acetylcholine receptors in the neuromuscular junction postsynaptic membrane. Same plasma volume, 1 to 1.5 removal. You can just use albumin without using FFP. In acute attack, it's recommended to use 3 to 6 treatment over 10 to 2 weeks time, either weekly and then bi-weekly schedule during the tapering course in the chronic phase. Both TPA or immunoadsorption are appropriate options as fast-acting intervention to decrease the MG activities. So, I'm going to touch about hematological condition now. There's 4 that we would see. So, what about TTP? TTP is usually present with a pentad of Maha pictures, thrombocytopenia, mental state changes, fever, and AKI. And usually, the patient has thrombotic event rather than bleeding tendency. It is essential that we check the Adams 13 level. It has to be less than 10% to diagnose TTP. The treatment has to be started urgently within 4 to 8 hours of diagnosis after other causes like sepsis and coronary hypertension has been excluded as a cause of TTP. So TPP replacement with plasma has the significant benefit of replacing the Adams 13 protease activity. The recommended regime is to continue for daily until the platelet rise up to 150 and above, and LDH is normalized to 2 to 3 days without treatment. and then you start to taper 3 times per week, 2 times per week, then weekly, and monitor the patient closely. What about atypical HUS? Atypical HUS can manifest like infection-associated HUS, but they may have a more progressive cause. Sometimes it's exacerbated by AKI, thrombosis, stroke, hepatitis, pancreatitis event. And usually this is caused by the activation of the alternative pathway. The first line of treatment is eculizumab. And because eculizumab may not be readily available, TPE is a reasonable choice. If the cause is due to the autoantibodies, you can see the last column is the is the genetic causes of atypical HUS, the treatment, you expect there's lack of treatment to TPE. This has become a grade category 3, grade 2C recommendation. Catastrophic APS syndrome, and usually patients will have thrombosis at least 3 organ system. The triple therapy approach of anticoagulation, glucocorticoid, and IVIG is the recommended therapy because it is grade 2C recommendation. The aim is to remove antiphosphate, lipid antibodies, cytokines, TNF, and complements. So plasma replacements have the benefit of replacing all the natural anticoagulants such as antithrombin 3, protein C, and protein S. And most published cases perform TPE for EOD for a minimum of 3 to 5 days up to a cost of 1 to 3 weeks. In hyperviscosity syndrome, it's class category 1, grade 1B recommendation. Usually examples would be Waldenstrom microglobulinemia or multiple myeloma. And standard of care is by removal of pyrrolidine. With the advancement of chemotherapy agent, usually that should be one of the first line. Alkylating agent like bendamustine or rituximab should be considered because it has proven to be effective in treating this disease. And each TPE treatment reduced the viscosity by 20 to 30%. What about metabolic disease? So there's 2 conditions, familial hypercholesterolemia. The recommended treatment would be lipoprotein apheresis or TPE with a strong 1A grade of recommendation. Patients with this condition have premature cardiovascular disease, and that's why the cornerstone of treatment involves lifestyle modification, reducing the fat in the food, lipid-lowering drugs like the monoclonal antibodies, PCSK9 inhibitors, or using the lipoprotein apheresis. And the patient should have a very low target of LDL, as stated here. The treatment, unfortunately, have to be lifelong, and the cost would be an issue if the patient has familial hypercholesterolemia. In Wilson disease, so the children are usually asymptomatic. Teenagers will have some liver abnormalities, whereas the adult will have the neurological complication. Whether the patients have symptoms or not, that shouldn't preclude the patient of receiving the TPE because it is a 100% penetrance disease. So apart from the TPE, low copper diet, chelation therapy, hemodilution mask, all have been used. And this is only a bridging therapy, as the definitive treatment would be a liver transplantation. Okay, I will finish off by just touching on 4 common renal disorders that we use TPE. First of all, would be good posture syndrome. So it's a grade 1B recommendation when the patient has abnormal creatinine more than 500. 1C indication, grade of recommendation when the patient has diffuse alveolar hemorrhage. So treatment would include TPE, cyclophosphamide, corticosteroid. So it's important that TPE is implemented as early as possible when you suspect anti-GBM disease. However, the response of the patient for those patients who have normal creatinine is rather poor and recovery is not expected, unfortunately. The minimal cost of treatment is about 10 to 2 weeks, 3 weeks time. It's important to note that the presence or absence of antibody should not use as a decision to start or terminate the treatment because there's lack of correlation of the anti-GBM level and the disease activity. For ANCA vasculitis, is a grade 1A recommendation when the creatinine is more than 500 and 1C when the patient has diffuse alveolar hemorrhage. And this AAV would include microscopic polyangiitis, granulomatous polyangiitis, eosinophilic granulomatosis polyangiitis, or renal limit vasculitis. And treatment should be divided into induction and maintenance phase of the treatment. So standard treatment includes steroids, cyclophosphamide or rituximab. The recommended treatment regime is 7 sessions of TPE over a period of 14 days. However, up to 12 treatment sessions has been reported with further improvement in patients in renal failure or diffuse alveolar hemorrhage. So the other two indications I'd like to touch about would be recurrent FSGS when the patient would be apparently clinically nephrotic. And most of the time, the etiology are idiopathic nephrotic syndrome. So steroid is the first line, followed by CNI, rituximab, then only we consider TPE. Recurrent FSGS is appeared to be a circulating factor that increase the glomerular permeability. The success rate is quite high at 50 to 70%. For antibody-mediated transplant rejection, so this can either present as early or late allograft dysfunction. One can use TPE, DFPP, or immunosorption to remove all these donor-specific antibodies. So in summary, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to conclude by saying that Journal of Clinical Apheresis provide up-to-date guidelines as to the treatment, as how to be prescribed, and to teach us about the different disease patterns and their progression. And apheresis, either whether donor or therapeutic apheresis, is an important part of the modern medicine, which involves multidisciplinary involvement of different disciplines. Drug removal is important, and we should not forget about redosing the medication if we're going to prescribe this treatment. However, I'd like to end by saying that adequate power randomized control trials are needed to define the roles of plasma apheresis in various disorders with meaningful and achievable outcome and biomarkers. With this, I'd like to thank you very much. I'd like to invite any question.
Thank you, Professor Christopher, for the very enlightening lecture. In view of the interest of time, maybe I just would like to ask one question from the Slido. The question is, in regard to the neurological disease, is the maximum exchanges is limited at 1.5 plasma volume? Can you use 2 plasma volume in neurological disease?
In the guideline, most of the treatment volume maximum is 1.5 because that's already removed about 80% of the plasma volume. So if you increase it to total plasma volume, that's only give you another 5% of efficacy. So that's why the general recommendation would be 1.5. And yeah.
Thank you, Professor Christopher. Now let us move on to the